The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Think about the weaponization of government we have seen from this Justice Department, both in a passive sense where they won't prosecute people who directly violate a statute and protest at Supreme Court justice's home with the design on influencing its decision, a case pending in front of the court. And then, of course, the active weaponization of government, like what they did with parents.
The weaponization of government, that is what we're seeing all around the world. Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. The summer camp over there in Edmond, Oklahoma, just has, I think it's just a few more days left to run. So I'm sure the teens are very much enjoying themselves over there and learning absolutely critical life lessons, and I'll be standing in for Mr. Flurry today. Well, thank you for joining us wherever you listen. CRN Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3, of course. We're very happy to, or on all their channels, go out with our partners over there on our website, thetrumpet.com, where you can get exclusively that live video and then all the other places that you can get the show, and not forgetting the podcast that's uploaded after the fact, pretty much wherever you get podcasts. Well, this kind of weaponization of government sets the theme for a lot of what I want to talk about today. This kind of rise in dictators. We live in a world of rising dictators, of authoritarian power. And wherever you look, we're moving away from democracy and towards dictatorship and towards some of these attributes that you would associate with dictatorship. It's worth talking about as we see these trends towards dictatorship here in the UK, in the US, and in some of these respects. I mean, we've had quite a bit on this show over the last couple of days about those revelations coming about the FBI. And I wanted to cover a little bit of the latest news from the FBI. There's been some more reports on their kind of weaponization, even just since the last show. And it does, I think, put some valuable context in what I want to talk about for the rest of the show. So, yesterday, of course, Mr. Flurry spoke about the Gracely bombshell, the news that the FBI, instead of trying to protect U.S. security, instead of trying to do what it's supposed to do, it was trying to cover up a threat to national security for political reasons. You know, on the one hand, they're manufacturing possible links to Russia with President Donald Trump. And yet, on the other hand, they're ignoring genuine threats from and links to Russia or links to all kinds of foreign powers when it comes to Joe Biden and Hunter Biden. But I wanted to just begin with another piece of news on this story today, where Jim Jordan published an open letter to Merrick Garland and to Christopher Wray, based on more whistleblowers from within the FBI. His letter, well, here's just a sample from it. From recent protected disclosures, we have learned that FBI officials are pressing agents to reclassify cases as domestic violent extremism, even if the cases do not meet the criteria for such a classification. Given the narrative pushed by the Biden administration that domestic violent extremism is the greatest threat facing our country, revelations that the FBI may be artificially padding domestic terrorism data is scandalous. So now we're seeing, well, if you're on the correct side from their point of view of the political spectrum, if they agree with you, if they want you to be in power, they'll help you commit crimes. And they'll help you cover them up. But if you disagree, if you're on the other side of the political spectrum, if they oppose you, well, then they'll frame you. Then they'll classify you as a domestic violent extremist, even if you're not. Even if you, how do they put it, don't meet the criteria for such a classification. They lie. That's what he's saying. They're lying. They're calling people, they're labeling people domestic violent extremists when they are not. They're being put under pressure to do this. So you're having now people, you know, if they disagree with your politics, then you attend a protest, well, you're a domestic violent extremist, and we'll lock you up. It's what you see from dictatorships around the world. It's a very disturbing step. The Federalist had an article overnight as well. The FBI keeps interfering in presidential elections. Time to disband it. And it's hard to disagree with that when you see, yeah, they've been interfering in presidential elections. But this is right out of what you see in communist countries, you know, painting enemies as violent extremists and then locking them up. I mean, this is not anywhere near on the same kind of scale as Soviet Russia or anything like that. But, you know, if you wait until millions of people are going into the gulags or hundreds or thousands or whatever, it's too late at that point. But it's exactly the same kind of thing. You have it. One of the first things they got set up in the Soviet Union was a powerful functioning intelligence service to go cart off opponents to prison, to the gulag. We've come a long, long way to how intelligence and these things should be operating. And here in the UK, there's disturbing trends in these lines, disturbing trends towards authoritarianism too. Here's an incident from the UK this week. It's just the start of a clip from a blogger. She kind of campaigns against this push for basically letting men into women's changing rooms, letting men into women's spaces, having men go to women's prisons, that you're seeing the transgender movement push. And she makes a number of videos campaigning against this. I think she has a podcast as well. But it's her talking about her experience of uploading a YouTube video.
So I come downstairs, actually got a lovely pink lemonade ice lolly in my hand, and I'm popping out to my office, and there's two police at the door. And are you Kelly J. Keene? I was like, yes. And they said, oh, can we come in? And I said, no, you can't. And he said, well, we're here because we've had a complaints. Do you do YouTube videos or something?
And she goes on to talk about exactly how this complaint played out. But she said something in a YouTube video, and then she has the actual police coming to her door on a Sunday afternoon. Not the YouTube police shutting her down, but the literal police saying, you can't say that. Or at least we don't think you should say that. She didn't end up getting arrested, but it's still pretty sinister when you start having the police come around saying, well, we disagree. What you said on YouTube is against official government guideline. I guess YouTube didn't take it down. In this way, it's almost amazing. You look at what YouTube will censor. YouTube didn't censor it, but the police still had a problem with it. They come around and say, well, you're not allowed to say that. It's a movement away from the kind of freedom and openness that Britain and America, that our societies have been known for years. At least 200 years. And in a very disturbing direction. I don't want to spend a vast amount of time on this particular story. Mr. Flurry covered it yesterday. I wouldn't surprise me if he has more to say about some of these latest revelations and Jim Jordan. We're seeing so much exposure. Maybe there'll even be more to talk about, more news on this tomorrow. Like Mr. Flurry said on the show yesterday, it is fascinating to see all of this exposure coming out right when we're getting America under attack from the printers and this new book is ready to go out. This exposes some of the physical details and reality of what's happening. That book really delves in and exposes the spiritual reality behind this. But I wanted to talk about this kind of worldwide trend of rising authoritarianism. You know, it used to be that you had Britain and America pushing freedom and democracy around the world. Now you're seeing kind of the world pushing America, pushing authoritarianism and that rising, and then that rubbing off on Britain and America. It's no longer people modeling their democracies after us. Instead, we say, well, how is communist China dealing with COVID? We should copy them. We should be more like communist China. It's an exact reverse of how the protest is. And we're seeing a global push towards authoritarianism. It's a dramatic fulfillment of a trend we've been talking about for a long, long time here at The Trumpet. So to start, here's an article. This is from Foreign Affairs, a remarkable story called Putin's New Police State. This is their introduction. Since the spring of 2022, a terrifying new force has coursed through Russian society. Activists who have protested the special operation in Ukraine are being rounded up. Opponents of the regime and even ordinary citizens who have had unauthorized foreign contacts are being thrown into Moscow's prison. I'm not going to try and say the name, where in Stalinist times, political prisoners were tortured and executed. Special border agents have been interrogating and intimidating Russians who tried to leave or to return. But even those who made it out are not safe. Exiles who have spoken out are being investigated, and their relatives in Russia are being harassed by the regime. And security police are cracking down on Russian companies that buy foreign rather than Russian raw materials and hardware. As Russian President Vladimir Putin's war in Ukraine enters its sixth month, a dramatic shift has occurred in the Kremlin security bureaucracy, and it is centered on the agency closest to Putin himself, the Russian Security Service, or the FSB. And this article goes on to talk about a big transformation that has been taking place with the FSB in Russia. It claims that the FSB was being prepped to take a bigger role in going into Ukraine and going after people that opposed Russia's rule there, and trying to hunt down partisans or anybody, military forces that continued to fight in this territory that Russia conquered. They didn't end up conquering all the territory that they thought they did. And so instead, well, they're being moved to home. It says here, running the new crackdowns in Russia are the FSB's counterterrorism unit, its counterintelligence service, and its investigative department. So see, you know, this is what the FBI is starting to get into. We disagree with your politics, therefore we will label you as a violent extremist, or we will label you as a terrorist. It's what Russia's been doing for years. And then you just say, well, we're just stopping terrorism. We're not going after political opponents. We're just clamping down on terrorism. Nobody wants terrorism. The article goes on to say, as the FSB spearheads a transformed, increasingly paranoid and heavily securitized state bureaucracy, the shift has profound implications for the nature of Putin's rule. In contrast to the largely surveillance-oriented agency of previous years, the FSB has become a far more expansive arm of an increasingly ruthless state. In its sweeping reach into domestic society, foreign affairs, and the military, the FSB has begun to look much less like its late Soviet predecessor, the KGB. It now resembles something much, much scarier, the NKVD, Stalin's notorious secret police, who conducted the great purges of the 1930s and maintained an iron lock on Russian society into the early years of the Cold War. So they're becoming more aggressive. It talks about how the FSB used to work to harass and intimidate journalists to get them to run away and leave the country. And then once that had happened, once they'd left, then they'd kind of leave them alone. Mission accomplished. We got rid of the troublesome journalist. Whereas now the trend has become almost more sinister, where once they've kind of reversed it, they're working to lure them back into Russia so that they can arrest them and lock them up, or going after their relatives that have been left behind. It's not good enough just to chase them away from Russia anymore. They'll open criminal cases against those that are abroad. And this isn't the only example of Russia becoming more aggressive and becoming more authoritarian. We have an article that I think will probably end up going out as the Trumpet Brief today from Jeremiah Jacques here at the Trumpet. And this article, if it doesn't go out of the Trumpet Brief, we'll put it up today or tomorrow. It's called Russia Has Made Ukraine Region an Abyss of Fear and Wild Lawlessness. And it begins, Russian forces are illegally holding, torturing, and forcibly displacing Ukrainian civilians in the occupied regions of Kherson and Zaporizhia, Human Rights Watch reported July 22nd, in the latest evidence of incalculable evil in Russia's war. This is a quote from Human Rights Watch. It says Russian forces have turned occupied areas of southern Ukraine into an abyss of fear and wild lawlessness. Torture, inhumane treatment, as well as arbitrary detention and unlawful confinement of civilians are among the apparent war crimes we have documented. The Russian authorities need to end such abuses immediately and understand they can and will be held accountable. Well, not in this life. I don't think they will be. I mean, ultimately, God says everybody will be held accountable for their actions, but the West isn't going to hold Vladimir Putin accountable for what he's doing. I think it's very clear that that's not going to happen. But It goes on to talk about how the violence there is to obtain information and to instill fear so that people will accept the occupation as Russia seeks to assert sovereignty over occupied territory. So it talks about prisoners of war, Ukrainian soldiers. You know, there is very strict rules. There's the Geneva Convention, things like this about how prisoners of war are treated. And Russia, as they've done so often in the past, are completely ignoring them, torturing prisoners of war. Some being beaten by a baseball bat, others hospitalized for a month with injuries. Third said that after 7 days in a Russian prison, he had broken ribs and busted kneecaps and could barely walk. You get civilians disappeared. They just never see them again. Many of those are buried in mass graves. Human Rights Watch estimates that there are about 600 civilians in Kherson having been disappeared and buried in a mass grave. And then you've got all of the mass deportations that are going on. That's in a different region of Russia, in the east there. But you're seeing a rising level of evil, a rising level of authoritarianism coming from Putin's Russia. I mean, it's not like Putin has been a good guy in the past. But you're seeing this push here. Here's what we've been watching Vladimir Putin in Bible prophecy for many, many years now. The Ezekiel chapter 38 and Ezekiel chapter 39, it has an end time prophecy. You can see that very clearly by reading the whole context. An end time prophecy that's talking about a prince of Rosh, if you look in the right translations, a prince of Russia, of Meshech and Tubal, or Moscow and Tobolsk, if you kind of update the language a bit, and he's a prince of Rosh. And we've said, well, this is going to be Vladimir Putin. Here's what Mr. Flurry said about this in his booklet, The Prophesied Prince of Rosh. His track record, his nationality, and his ideology show he is fulfilling a linchpin Bible prophecy. The time frame of his rule also show that nobody else could be fulfilling Ezekiel 38 and 39 prophecy. So he's fulfilling this important prophecy. You can go back several years, and because of this prophecy, Mr. Flurry was talking about how, well, that Vladimir Putin has a level of diabolical evil on the level of Stalin. He was writing that nearly 10 years ago. I should have pulled up the exact date, but he was talking about, well, we're seeing this level of evil from him that's on a level with Stalin. And now, while you're getting Foreign Affairs or Foreign Policy, this big, very well-respected news magazine saying, well, he's resurrecting the NKVD, Stalin-style secret police. He's not going back to the Soviet Union as it was in the 1980s or the 70s or the 60s, as bad as it was then. He's going back to how it was under Stalin. He's copying his security services on that. But you're seeing this again all around the world. It's a global trend. Jeremiah had another article go up yesterday. China works to block UN from releasing Xinjiang report. That was up on our website, thetrumpet.com, talking about the UN being pushed, pressured under China not to release details into human rights abuses in Xinjiang, this place where China has a million at least of these Uyghur Muslims locked in concentration camps. There's modern slavery going on. We hear a lot about slavery. We hear a lot about slavery that happened 100 years ago. A lot of these woke companies, woke businesses, they don't have much to say about slavery that's going on right now. In a lot of cases, because they are they're not employing slaves. They are profiting from the results of slave labor in China. Some of these big woke companies like Nike, they're working with slaves. And then China's pushing to cover this up. We're seeing, again, some of these institutions like slavery and concentration camps coming back. There's a critical prophetic reason why. Before I get into that, I wanted to read you one more article. This is from Spiegel. The article is called Germany and the End of Globalization. But listen to the point they make on this subject. This kind of global push towards authoritarianism, away from freedom. They write, the number of democratic countries around the world are shrinking steadily, and autocratic countries are registering more patents than the West. A new era is dawning, and it could have dramatic consequences for our work, our money, and our lives. These days, even stoic government leaders seem overwhelmed by the barrage of world crises, tremendous upheavals, and changing times. I mean, this sounds almost like something Mr. Armstrong wrote, saying this is coming, that soon world leaders will be overwhelmed by the barrage of world crises, tremendous upheavals, and changing times. Now, Spiegel is saying this is reality. This is what is happening. The global financial crisis, the refugee crisis, Brexit, the climate collapse, the coronavirus pandemic. We talked a lot about the climate collapse last time. I'm not going to get sidetracked by that. And the war in Ukraine have all happened in succession. It's more than enough to make a person dizzy. And yet all this now simply feels like a preview for the massive change that is only now starting to roll in. The age of globalization is at an end. And it talks about this. It's, I think, typically for a German news magazine, it looks at this in a very economic way. But I'll just read another couple of quotes from here. But it says, for the past several years, studies have noted that freedom and democracy are in retreat worldwide and that autocratic regimes are on the rise and becoming more powerful. Between 1970 and 2010, the share of democratic governments in the world more than doubled to 53%. So the world was becoming freer, more democratic from 1970 to 2010. Since then, however, the trend has been steadily downward. At the same time, autocracies are increasingly successful economically. They are now the source of 60% share of all patent registrations. It's an interesting stat. I'm not quite sure why Spiegel is so obsessed with that stat. I mean, it does show that they're the scientific dynamic countries. I mean, this is the future. The future is rising in a lot of these authoritarian countries. So I guess it's worth getting into. It just seems amusing that they're so fixated on patents. Anyway, so if world trade actually strengthens autocracies rather than weakens them, this raises complicated questions, particularly for Germany, a country whose economy is particularly reliant on exports. Can China remain such a close partner, or Turkey? It's a fascinating point. We've got another article that I believe will be in our next Trumpet print edition that's going to print very soon, I think today or tomorrow. It's called something along the lines of The End of the End of History. That's also by Jeremiah Jacques. Quoting a lot of his articles today, but the point of this article is you used to have people like Francis Fukuyama, the international relations scholar. He's probably the most prominent pusher of this theory, where he had his book, The End of History, or his essay, The End of History and the Last Man. And his whole thesis was mankind's history has been a search for government and how we are to rule ourselves. And now we have the answer. We know the answer. The answer is democracy. And the answer to how to run our economies is free market economics, free market capitalism. We've got that sorted. That's history over. History has been our search for these answers. We have the answers. Now we just need to wait for democracy to spread out around the world. That's it. That's where we're going. And there's going to be a few bumps along the way. He said it's not necessarily going to be a smooth process all the time. And maybe there'll be one or two reverses. But in general, we are going to have this trend where democracy and free market economics spread throughout the world and brings peace and prosperity to everybody. And we're seeing that's not happening. The Spiegel just goes through some of those statistics. We're seeing this go in reverse. So what is happening? What is happening? Well, Jesus Christ himself gave the answer. Large number of people in the world and in Britain, even still, especially in America, say they're Christians, that they believe the words of Jesus Christ. Well, let's look at what he said in Luke 21. Just a critical prophecy from Jesus Christ talking about end times. Again, Jesus Christ himself was not afraid to talk about end times, was not afraid to talk about Bible prophecy and world events. He came as a newscaster to talk about epic, fantastic world events. And so here he does that. But I'll just read Luke 21 and verse 20. Well, no, we'll just read verse 22. For these be the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. And then in verse 24, it says, and they shall fall by the edge of the sword and be led away captive into all nations, and Jerusalem shall be trodden down till the down of the Gentiles, until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. So Jesus Christ talked about a times of the Gentiles. And we have our free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. That will give you the overview of all of Bible prophecy that will help you understand exactly what Jesus Christ is talking about. You know, if you want to know what the times of the Gentiles mean, well, what is a Gentile? Well, a Gentile power is a world power, a nation that's not Israel. Well, okay, who is Israel? Well, the state of Israel in the Middle East and the Jews of Israel in the Middle East, they are Israel, but they are not all of Israel. The Bible talks about there being other tribes aside from just Judah, and they've been lost to view from history, but the Bible has a huge number of specific prophecies about them. If they're not significant, you know, why would Christ himself be talking about the times of the Gentiles? Why would Christ himself be telling his disciples, well, I've sent you to the lost sheep of the house of Israel? We need to know who Israel is, and God reveals it. He's revealed it in this end time, and our book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, goes through that. And as you can guess from the title, Britain and America, they're descended from Israel. And in this end time, prior to the times of the Gentiles, God has been pouring out blessings upon Israel. And if we want to understand the true reason why the world has had a lot of freedom and democracy and stability and relative peace and relative prosperity, well, there have been blessings from God. But instead of using those blessings to obey God, we've been using them to disobey him and to go further and further into ways that hurt ourselves, that harm ourselves, that break God's law that God put in place for our benefit. And so now we're moving into the times of the Gentiles. And even Spiegel, you know, Europe's news magazine, they see this. A new era is dawning. And it could have dramatic consequences for our work, our money, and our lives. We're moving into a new era. He says, and you know, talks about all of those crises and says, and this now simply feels like a preview for the massive change that is only now starting to roll in. Well, that's what they're right. Let me read to you what Mr. Flurry wrote. He had an article, Climax of Man's Rule Over Man. It was a couple of years ago. We kind of had a special issue on government. And he talks about this subject here. But he said, these times of the Gentiles are yet to be fully realized. However, we are in the outer edges of this catastrophic storm. Events taking place in Xinjiang and Hong Kong, China, in Russia and its periphery, you know, nations like Ukraine, in Europe and Latin America, and in the Middle East have everything to do with this prophecy. This is part of the core of Bible prophecy right out of your Bible. Yet we don't hear much about the times of the Gentiles today. Why not? You know, these are the times that we are living in. We're getting into these times of the Gentiles. That's why we're seeing this shift towards authoritarianism. This is why it's no longer Britain and America exporting freedom and democracy, and instead we're importing from these other Gentile nations the way that they do things. And we're importing some of their oppressive practices where intelligence services label people that they don't like and people that disagree with the current administration politically, well, then they label them violent extremists, violent domestic extremists or terrorists, and start locking them up. You know, we're starting to do what Russia is doing. We used to hope that go back to the Cold War. To a certain extent, it was the other way around. Russia did what America was doing. They put in place elections and democracy, and it didn't last particularly long. But now we're going exactly the other way. Mr. Flurry goes on to talk about the way that the Bible talks about beast powers. It talks about these nations as rising beasts. It talks about a modern beast power coming on the scene. And Mr. Flurry says there's a reason God uses this terminology. Every leader of these Gentile kingdoms was under the sway of an evil spiritual influence and came to have the mind of a wild, fierce beast. When such men attain power, they become cunning, ferocious beasts. That's Vladimir Putin. I mean, maybe he made some mistakes over Ukraine or it didn't go as well as he had hoped for him. But you look over the length of his career, he is a cunning, ferocious beast. Throughout history, they're routinely thought like wild animals wanting to conquer, pillage, burn and destroy. As the U.S. falls in power, it is being replaced by leaders who act like wild, raging beasts. God calls these leaders beasts for a reason. Yet people don't believe God. Somehow the leaders of Israel think our modern world has evolved beyond that evil nature. We see this all the time. You know, This is you see people like Barack Obama pushing this Biden administration now, pushing hard to make a deal with Iran. And he's got an agenda behind that. He is trying to bring down the United States of America. But so many of America's top academics, top international relations scholars and foreign policy scholars and foreign policy journalists are all for a new Iran deal. They're all cheering him on in that. And maybe some of them share his same agenda, but a lot of them are just thoroughly deceived. And a big part of it is this deception. They believe we've kind of evolved beyond our human nature. You know, we can trust Iran. Iran, they're good people at heart. Ayatollah Khomeini, he's a good person at heart. And, you know, they don't really want to wipe Israel off the map. They're just saying that for a negotiating posture. We can trust them. They just want to be left in peace. And if we let them have the bomb, they'll feel secure. So then they won't lash out anymore. It's completely, completely false reasoning built on this false premise that human nature is evil. And it leads to some incredibly dangerous conclusions. You know, negotiating with beasts, negotiating with Iran and others. In reality, we haven't even seen the most savage of these beasts, writes Mr. Flory. The worst of the Gentiles, the worst times of the Gentiles are yet ahead of us. And one place we still need to keep watching for this rise of the times of the Gentiles is Europe. We've long said there's a beast power rising up there. You know, we could see that rising up soon. We're seeing gas prices, electricity prices shooting up. The European Union is starting to put in process a gas rationing deal where, and it's kind of humorous, where Germany's almost, Germany got in bed with Russia. Of course, it wasn't an accident. That was all deliberate, as we've talked about before. But now Russia's not selling Germany much gas. And so to make sure Germany doesn't run out, they've got the whole European Union on a ration now. They've all agreed they're going to cut back and they're going to ration their gas. But it is putting a real pressure on people. It was all over the newspapers today where some forecasting company or something, they're starting, we have kind of a price cap system where the government sets a price cap on how much businesses can charge for energy. And that price cap is set to increase. And so now they're saying, well, the average home is going to be spending £500 a month on energy. That's a huge sum. It's $700 roughly, maybe. That would be the average monthly electricity bill as these prices are just spiraling up and up. And that's good. That can have some huge economic impacts all across Europe, Italy as well. And there's, you could have some pretty incredible developments afoot in Italy over the summer. I was going to talk a little bit about that. I think I'm going to skip it mostly and maybe get into it a different time because I want to save plenty of time for my second half or last element because I usually end up trying to dash through that at lightning speed. But they're having an election September 25th. You could see the far right win. The next leader, Italy's next prime minister, maybe the leader or of the Brothers of Italy, or I should say. She's a woman. But this party started after World War II by supporters of Mussolini. And Mr. Armstrong was on the scene at the time talking about how, well, Mussolini was resurrecting the Roman Empire. He even talked about, this is what Mr. Armstrong wrote. He said, when Benito Mussolini became Italy's prime minister in 1922, he immediately began to refer to his regime as the Holy Roman Empire. Mussolini came along and played a part in raising up the Roman Empire. Adolf Hitler came along, played an even bigger role in raising up the Roman Empire, in modeling their empire on Rome, on Charlemagne. It's this empire that's talked about in Revelation chapter 17, raising it up. And now you could see a successor to Mussolini or the successor party to Mussolini, with some of the same kind of policies, some of the same ideas about the state's relationship with the Catholic Church, for example. Are we going to see Italy proclaiming a new Holy Roman Empire in some form very soon? I mean, to see a successor of Mussolini or somebody who's kind of looking back at Mussolini's legacy like that in Italy would be a dramatic development. And that's what could be on the cards on September 25th. I saw another article today. It was talking about how it was kind of, you know, beyond the right wing and the far right and these parties winning in the election. The question was, are they going to have a two-thirds majority in both chambers so that they can change Italy's constitution? And it was saying, well, that's quite possible. They could not only win by just a dramatic landslide. So maybe we'll be in for some dramatic changes in Italy. We might start to see the times of the Gentiles or these Gentile beast powers really rising up in Europe dramatically. It's already risen more than the world really realizes. But keep watching that over the summer. But I will leave a lot of what I was going to say there just to one side. We'll take a short break. If you do want to read more about like the times of the Gentiles, as I mentioned, and if this is all new to you, the United States and Britain in Prophecy is a great place to go to learn more about that, to start to understand that. We have our free phone number, 1-866-930-3024. And we'd be very happy to send you a free copy of that. You can also go to our website, thetrumpet.com. You can read that online yourself. You can order it online yourself, but we'll take a quick break. If you want to call us during the break, order that book, we'd be very happy for you to do so. And this isn't, you know, we don't send these booklets out to get anything. It's not about trying to get donations or get your address so we can send you marketing material or anything like that. We don't follow up. We don't request donations. If you just order the book and never call from us again, you'd never hear from us again. It's just we want to get this truth out there. So if you haven't got that, you can order that in any of those ways. We'll take a quick break and we'll talk about just an incredibly inspiring subject and some of the latest news from the James Webb Telescope. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
One third of your Bible is prophecy, and 90% of it is for our time today. This is why, when you study Bible prophecy, you often read statements like, in that day, in the last days, and at the time of the end. Biblical prophecy is what makes the Bible so relevant to today, so essential to understanding our modern world. Most people, even in the world of religion, assume that nations like Britain, America, Germany, Russia, and China are not mentioned in Bible prophecy. But if prophecy is mainly for our time today, how could the Bible ignore some of the most powerful and prominent nations of today? The key to understanding prophecy is knowing the biblical identities of modern nations. Learn about these identities in Herbert W. Armstrong's book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. In this book, you will learn about the astonishing identity of the American and British people in biblical prophecies. Request your free copy today, The United States and Britain in Prophecy.
The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Show. Thank you, the guys at headquarters, for that promo. It's really great to see some of these. I don't know, it seems new to me, but I tend to listen to the show more than watch it. But it's a lot of great video content on these promos these days, and a great recap of some of what I was talking about in the first half. But we've talked a fair bit on this show about the James Webb Space Telescope. We've showed some of the amazing pictures, but we're now just starting to get as well some of the scientific papers, some of these astronomers delving into exactly what these pictures show, what they tell us about the universe. And I want to spend a bit of time talking about these discoveries. I think you'll find it absolutely fascinating. I did. It's just within weeks what they are discovering out of these pictures. It's exactly what I anticipated. It's probably exactly what you anticipated, but I still think you'll find it very inspiring as well. I also wanted to have a hope-filled conclusion after what we've been talking about in the first half. You know, this world is becoming more dark, more evil. We're moving away from freedom, and it's affecting all of us. You know, transgressions are coming to the full, but it's all for a great reason. God is using this and these events and some of these individuals to teach us vital lessons that we can't rule ourselves, that we need God's help, that we all need to submit to him and to his government. And then when we do that, he has just this absolutely incredible, beautiful future for us. And he's showing us more and more about this future. But when I think Mr. Flurry read this when we were looking at the James Webb telescope pictures, but when Mr. Armstrong was watching those first pictures come in from Mars, he said, but I had to think that it showed precisely what I had expected from what is revealed from the God of creation in the Bible. It was a dry, barren surface of futility. And seeing all of these pictures come in from the James Webb telescope and all of the galaxies, all of the details, it is exactly what we expected to see. But here's Nature had an article. So this is from Nature magazine. This is one of the most prestigious scientific magazines. And their article is Four Revelations from the Webb Telescope About Distant Galaxies. It was just an excellent article. If you're kind of really keen on the James Webb Telescope, as I am, you may want to go and look it up. But the first of their four revelations is there are an awful lot of galaxies way out there. And here's what they said about this. In its first observation programs, which kicked off in June, Webb discovered many distant galaxies that lie beyond the reach of other observatories, such as the Hubble Space Telescope. Then they quote Richard Ellis, who's an astronomer at UCL, University College London. He says, it's suggested what many of us have been arguing, that there are galaxies out there beyond what we saw with Hubble. So I'm sure you remember the story with Hubble, where they would focus on just these increasingly tiny portions of sky, and instead of seeing them empty, they would see just billions of galaxies in there. And now they're saying, well, there are galaxies beyond what we could see with Hubble. There is way more out there. This article says many of the Webb images are peppered with never before seen galaxies in the distant universe. They quote another astronomer saying, there's hardly any empty space that doesn't have something. We call it space, but there's not much empty space. So this, this, as I think many people suspected, this new telescope is opening our eyes on to just how huge this universe is. You know, every time we look, every time we build a better telescope, we discover even more. This article talked about how they've discovered 44 unknown, very distant galaxies that they've kind of proven we didn't know existed before. I'm sure there'll be a great many more. You know, God connects man directly with this universe. The book of Hebrews talks about God putting man over all of this, over all of those distant galaxies. And there are just so many galaxies so far distant out there, we're only just seeing them. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if pretty soon they'll have to up the estimate of how many galaxies there are in the universe again. I think they're what, saying somewhere around 100, 200 billion, I think has been the standard estimate for several years. Maybe they'll come out and say, well, we've been looking through all these Webb pictures. We're going to have to add another couple of zeros to that. I don't know, but they're certainly discovering more. This is another quote. This is from Marco Castellano in this article. He's at the National Institute for Astrophysics in Rome. He said the fact that we found these two bright galaxies, that was really a surprise. So he's talking about two bright galaxies they found in particular. He and his colleagues weren't expecting to find any galaxies that distant in this small part of the sky. So they were expecting, okay, maybe in the distant pictures that we're getting, the most distant, maybe we'll get fairly rare galaxies, but it will be hard to find. And they look and boom, there's two right away. Because of course, the further they look back, the longer it's taking the light from those galaxies to reach us. So the earlier we're looking into the early times of the universe. And so they're thinking, well, the early days of the universe, maybe galaxies are pretty rare. And they're finding out that they're wrong. And this brings us to something else that is just absolutely fascinating about this. I'll just read Romans chapter 1 and verse 20. A familiar verse, I think, to many people on this subject. But it says, for the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. We can learn about God's eternal power and Godhead. His government, his rulership, his creator from what he has created. And even without, it doesn't take instruments like the James Webb telescope to understand that and to learn about, to be able to prove that God exists and this creation was created for a purpose. And if it weren't for kind of that evil human nature that wants to rebel against God and find an excuse not to obey him and listen to him, Well, we would have all come to that conclusion. But, you know, they have human nature and you know, people rebel. They don't want to believe there is a God. So they come up with their own theories. But just then, the more evidence that there is, the more of these discoveries there are, that just you have this increasingly monumental mountain of evidence of a God, of a creator. Mr. Hilliker had an article recently, Where the Webb Telescope is Pointing. And well, he talks about how modern science is dominated by the belief system of evolution, you know, that you kind of had this big bang, and then there's a whole theory of kind of stellar evolution. So there's the idea, you know, you have this big bang and something caused it, and then particles come into existence, and then these particles gradually coalesce and they become dust clouds, and the dust clouds become stars, and the stars become galaxies, and the universe kind of evolves into being. That's the dominant theory. Mr. Hilliker writes, but as images and data provide an ever clearer picture, there are many scientists who are turning to face reality. They're willing to look at the data in good faith and see what it actually teaches us, even where it proves further that the universe has design and intent. And then he makes this prediction about Webb. Webb is ready to literally see invisible things from the creation. If it works, we are about to see power, beauty, and even more dazzling proof of the great God who made it and who made us. There is absolutely no other way that all of this could have come together. Scientific knowledge is increasingly aligning with the description of creation contained in the Holy Bible. Look at the cosmos. You are looking at the handiwork of God. With advanced telescopes and other extraordinary instruments, the more we learn, the more impressive it becomes. All right, so keep that quote, keep that forecast, if you like, from Mr. Hilliker, based on the Bible, in mind, and we'll get back to this this Nature article. So it quotes from Alison Kirkpatrick. She's an astronomer at the University of Kansas. And she says, with the resolution of James Webb, we are able to see galaxies that have disks way earlier than we thought they did. That's a problem, she says, because it contradicts earlier theories of galaxy evolution. We're going to have to figure that out. So here you go. Tomorrow's news again. Tomorrow's news today again. Oh, we told you the James Webb telescope is going to show you things about the early universe that scientists didn't expect. That we're going to see more proof that God made it. We're going to see some of these theories of stellar evolution be debunked. And it's been going a matter of weeks. You know, it didn't even take like 2 years for all of this to come out. Weeks. And we're starting to see man's theories of stellar evolution be debunked. And scientists saying, well, we've got to go back to the drawing board. And I'm sure they'll come up with another theory of stellar evolution, or they'll try and adjust it to adjust the theory to fit the evidence now, and then we'll get some more evidence, and maybe they'll have to go back to the drawing board again. I'll just read some more from this article. It says, another preprint manuscript suggests that massive galaxies formed earlier in the universe than previously known. A team led by Ivo Labbe of the Swinburne University of Technology in Melbourne, Australia, reports finding 7 massive galaxies in this particular field or images, with certain, you know, redshifts, certain distance away from us. This team writes, we infer that the central regions of at least some massive galaxies were already largely in place 500 million years after the Big Bang, and that massive galaxy formation began extremely early in the history of the universe. So this whole theory of stellar evolution, and you know, we start to get dust clouds and stars and then small galaxies and gradually building up to bigger galaxies, they're looking back and seeing, oh, wow, we look back until the early days, what we believe are the early days of the universe, and we find big galaxies there already. We don't find this gradual evolution. And you know, that kind of model that I'm giving, you know, they've built a much more complex model of stellar evolution and a much more complicated theory of how it all works. There's, you know, they've kind of brought in all kinds of incredible research and things that are, you know, accurate science based on how subatomic particles work and things like that. But it's all built on this flawed foundation, on this fundamental assumption that there is no God, that there was no design, and that things just kind of gradually built themselves and evolved. And they're starting to find out all of these things going wrong. Here's another way that this some of these theories are starting to go wrong. Going back to this Nature article, and studies of galactic chemistry also show a rich and complicated picture emerging from the web data. A little further down, astronomers had thought that the process of chemical enrichment in which stars fuse hydrogen and helium to form heavy elements took a while. But the finding that it is underway in early galaxies will make us rethink the speed at which star formation occurs, Kirkpatrick says. So under this theory of stellar evolution and things like that, well, you have the Big Bang, and the universe is full of very simple particles, you know, hydrogen atoms. That's just one proton. And then these all coalesce and they come together and they form stars. And inside stars, these single protons are fused together to make bigger, more complicated atoms. But it takes time. So the idea is you look at the early universe and big atoms are rare and everything's all very simple. And they've built this incredible instrument. It really is incredible that the Webb telescope is able to go and say, these are the chemicals that were present in galaxies that are billions of light years away and billions of light years old. That really is amazing. But they're going and they're doing that and they're finding, oh, well, we thought these galaxies wouldn't have these chemicals yet, that there just wouldn't have been time for them to be created, but in this kind of slow process of evolution. And instead, they're going back and they're looking at these kind of earliest results that they can. And, oh, it's got oxygen, lots of it. Or at least, you know, much more than would have been possible under our theories. They they quote another scientist, Seuss. I didn't write down his full name, but this article says it potentially changes our whole view of how galaxy size evolves over time. So this is another detail where they have a long theory. They're looking in more detail as well in the kind of the middle of their theory of galactic evolution and what they thought went on there. And they're also finding out, oh, well, that's wrong as well. That doesn't match up. It says Hubble studies suggested that galaxies start out small and grow bigger over time. That's the kind of theory they'd came up with. But the Webb findings hint that Hubble didn't have the whole picture. And so galaxy evolution might be more complicated than scientists had anticipated. Well, it's not more complicated. It's just non-existent. With Webb just at the beginning of a planned 20 years of work, astronomers know they have a lot of changes ahead. And then listen to this conclusion. This is from Kirkpatrick, this astronomer quoted earlier. Right now, I find myself lying awake at 3 a.m, wondering if everything I've ever done is wrong. They're looking at just a matter of weeks of data from the James Webb telescope. And they're saying, oh, you know what? All of our theories of stellar evolution and the universe just kind of evolving by itself out of a primal soup of atoms that came out of a Big Bang. I'm starting to wonder if everything I've ever done with that is wrong. And it's just weeks in. How much more are we going to get out of that? It's just amazing. And NASA, when the James Webb telescope went up, they quoted Psalm 19, the heavens declare the glory of God. The firmament shows his handiwork. That's what we're seeing. We're seeing that in even more detail. You know, these stars didn't evolve. God created them. God put them there. But then that raises wonderful questions. You know, well, if God created them, if he made the universe, if there's a great God that did all that, well, why? And you look in the Bible for that answer, and it says, well, that's directly connected with you, mankind. I have a plan for you that goes out into that universe. I want to wind down with a quote, one of my favorite quotes from Mr. Gerald Flurry. This is from the February 2004 Trumpet magazine. He had an article, Mars Reveals Your Universe Potential. And it applies, I think, very well to what we've been talking about on this show, both with the kind of some of the more discouraging immediate news in the last half, but just this, what we're seeing from James Webb in the, that we talked about in the second. He said, in this world full of terrorism, we need our universe dream. We need to see the stupendous possibility and the eternal majesty. That is what will motivate us to achieve our lofty calling. Nothing can stimulate our imagination like comprehending our universe potential. Nothing. Scientists dare to introduce new theories about the universe, but we dare much more. We dare to believe our creator no matter what. And then God gives us the faith we need to fulfill our incredible human potential. Well, that is about all we've got time for today. Please do get in touch with us at td@thetrumpet.com. We'd be very happy to hear from you, very happy to send you any of the material we've talked about on this show. Thanks for joining us today, and I'm sure Mr. Flurry will be back with you tomorrow.